Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives, all of them stemming from the first Democratic presidential debate for the 2016 cycle. Those are about 2.5 hours we're never, ever getting back. If those of you who watch baseball instead, very good move. Hillary Clinton largely being described as the winner by most folks who watch the debate, but that's a little bit like you or I dominating a bunch of kindergartners in basketball and deciding that we're ready for the NBA. On to the lone good martini here. You had five people on stage. Most people probably weren't aware of at least half of the candidates that were up there, but there were basically four people who live in a fantasy land and one person who, while will not be a good president because he was not a good senator and lurches liberal when everything matters, like on Obamacare or the stimulus and so forth, former Virginia Senator Jim Webb at least has his head in the real world and had the temerity to actually say things that were critical of the Obama administration, including the Iran nuclear deal.
I believe that the signal that we sent to the region when the Iran nuclear deal was concluded was that we are accepting Iran's greater position in this very important balance of power among our greatest ally, Israel, and the Sunnis represented by the Saudi regime and Iran. It was a position of weakness, and I think it encouraged the acts that we've seen in the past several weeks.
And, of course, the Democrats in the hall yawned. He also talked about the need to check on China and their ambitions in the South China Sea. He thought they were the biggest threat going forward. Some on the right may agree or disagree, but at least Jim Webb has a decent idea of what's really happening in the world. And while he wouldn't be a good president, it's easy to tell who the person who's actually spent some time dealing with serious issues has been on that stage.
Yeah, I'd agree with that assessment there, Greg. Three things kind of jump out about Jim Webb. One, I mean, honestly, you can't help but wonder if Jim Webb was running as a Republican. How would he do? Right? It's easy to see a personality of that type and a record, a life history of that type getting, you know, high single digits, 10% in a crowded GOP field. Probably a strongest on national security from where we're from our perspective. He really wanted to talk about China last night. And the Democratic Party, which today is functionally isolationist and pacifist, didn't want to hear about it. He was the only one to stand up for gun rights. He was the only one to stand up basically indicating you can't tax the rich your way to paying for everything. And he kind of, you know, was the only voice of reality to Bernie Sanders. At one point he said, you know, Bernie, I don't think the Congress is going to pay for all that stuff. He was the only candidate in the real world. Obviously, the Democratic Party doesn't care for that. He kind of wondered, like, you wonder if he'd wandered onto the right stage. Second of all, Greg, did it seem to you that Jim Webb had indigestion of some kind just needed to let out a belch? A very strange delivery of this guy. I mean, for the rest of my life, Jim Webb could do amazing things with his life, and he has done amazing things with his life, but I'm always going to think of Peggy Noonan comparing him to an angry potato. And it's juvenile. It's unfair. I shouldn't do it. But obviously, he was not the smoothest debater on that stage. And you kind of want to keep in mind, this is a guy who has won, I believe, only one race his entire life, his 2006 race against George Allen. It was a very close race, and he was helped along by obviously a strongly anti-Republican mood that year. And of course, George Allen saying macaca. I think we can safely say he is not going to be a runaway candidate in the Democratic nominee process. Having said that, he is, from where we sit, the most palatable candidate amongst that's a very low bar considering this field.
Jim, I think he was probably a little bit nervous. As you mentioned, he hasn't done this a lot. He certainly hasn't done it very recently. I think when he blanked on one of the names of his own kids, that probably set the tone for him. On Tuesday night. He did get it, actually. He didn't actually blank on it. But when you've got, like, was it five kids or maybe even more, and you want to go through each of their names and their occupations, it's pretty ambitious.
He had like 80% of them. Get off his case.
So anyway, Hillary Clinton, of course, was the one most people wanted to see and see how she would react to the different candidates. And shockingly, the issue of her emails didn't come up until, I believe, the second hour of the debate. Anderson Cooper did bring it up, and to his credit, he brought it up in a fairly confrontational way. And he seemed to be setting the stage for a pretty good back and forth with the candidates. Hillary Clinton gave her standard, well, the State Department allowed it, meaning I allowed it. And I've been totally transparent. I printed off a bunch of emails. What's your problem? So that set up the opportunity for a great comeback from Bernie Sanders about power corrupting and all sorts of other things that he always likes to talk about. But instead, he said this.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too.
Had to leave the cackle in there after that. Jim, you could tell Hillary's humility not exactly shining through in that moment, but just very strange when obviously one of the issues that makes Hillary Clinton vulnerable gives Bernie Sanders at least some oxygen in some of these early contests. Nobody, including Sanders, had any interest in going after Clinton for potentially breaking the law or compromising national security. They just completely punted.
Greg, you're thinking like a capitalist, okay? Let me straighten you out. In the socialist manner, you don't take votes away from your rival. That is just fundamentally unfair. And so as a result of that, I would not attack the person standing between me and the nomination where she is weakest. Also, keep in mind, the entire time last night, I did not have a microphone. I just shouted at people all the time. It tires my voice when I do that. Yeah, so Greg, how often do you see a candidate say that he is sick and tired of hearing about the FBI investigation of his biggest rival? I had said in the morning, Joel, this is actually a very clarifying night, and the Sanders people are gonna you know, scream their heads off over this, but Bernie Sanders doesn't really want to be president of the United States.
Right.
I mean, also, I'd be like, well, how do you – because if he really wanted to, he would have gone after Hillary on that. I mean, whether or not he likes it, that is the opportunity, right? That is the doorway. That is what has Democrats feeling nervous about her. They feel nervous about this for one of two things. One, either they think it really was a stupid thing to do, or even if they think it's a vulnerable thing to do, they feel like she keeps lying about it and she's not honest about it and she won't come clean about it. And because of that, it makes her vulnerable. Now, when your biggest rival has a vulnerability on an issue and it's not exactly what you wanted, you don't get to be choosy. You don't get to pick on this. And yet for some reason, Bernie Sanders didn't want to do that, making me think he – you know, a lot of people kind of compared him to Howard Dean. You know, this is a guy who wants to be the pure symbol of an ideal. He does, you know, Ted Kennedy versus Jimmy Carter. He doesn't really want to win, because if you win, you have to govern, and to govern, you have to compromise.
And also Martin O'Malley, he had gone after her on the emails and being very critical over the fact that how she handled it was distracting from the rest of the campaign. He had a chance to go after it, also didn't do it. I thought that was kind of his Tim Pawlenty Obamacare moment, where he was really
Tim Pawlenty was yelling at his TV, yelling, punch the guy, come on.
Where he said it on the Sunday morning chat show, and then the very next day in a debate, he had a chance to say it to Mitt Romney's face, and he wouldn't do it, and his campaign was basically toast after that. Same thing for Martin O'Malley. I know a lot of people think that his differences with Hillary Clinton over Syrian no-fly zones and Glass-Steagall are going to really make a difference in this campaign. I don't think that's quite going to happen.
The only person who's really standing in the way of Hillary Clinton right now is Joe Biden.
Yes. The first thought in my mind after the debate last night was, if Joe Biden doesn't get in the next 48 hours, nothing's going to convince him to get in this race.
That's a good point. Well, here's the question. Do you look at Hillary, and we'll get to the crazy martini in a second, but do you look at Hillary and you say, okay, she's the best candidate on stage last night. She's the most polished. Even if you think she's inauthentic, she always pivots back to stay-at-home care and various other, you know, touchy-feely issues and stuff like that. She's pretty inflappable. She knows how to go on the attack, and she speaks in complete sentences. And, you know, like, put that up against Lincoln Chafee, and she looks like, you know, Winston Churchill. Now, she's still trailing Sanders badly in Iowa and New Hampshire. So do you look at that and say, okay, she's losing against a weak field, or do you look at her and say, okay, she's going to mop the floor with these guys, and she's going to be back to running away with this thing fairly certain? It'd be interesting to see which way, you know, how Biden assesses last night.
Lincoln Chafee last night said he was a block of granite. I think a block of granite would probably be polling a little bit higher.
But Anderson, you're being mean to me. I just got into the Senate. I didn't even know which button was yes and no. So I voted for Glass-Steagall. You're being a little hard on me, Anderson. Why does everyone keep calling me Steve Doocy?
On to the crazy martini, and I think it probably could be best summed up by a statement that you said, Jim, last night. Basically, the Democrats are moving very much in an unabashed direction towards socialism on virtually everything. We basically saw it as a constant battle between the candidates last night about who could get the government to do more in different areas and spend more money. You had Hillary Clinton being asked about the the leave that she wants to have reformed. How are you going to pay for it? And her response was, well, Republicans are going after Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
And then you've got Martin O'Malley, who every liberal thing that is being discussed. Well, I did that in Maryland when we see how Maryland is doing. And here's one exchange with Juan Carlos Lopez, who I think gets the Hugh Hewitt Award for least amount of minutes in a CNN debate, talking about giving Obamacare to illegals.
Secretary Clinton, Governor O'Malley wants to open up Obamacare to millions of undocumented immigrants and their children, including almost 90,000 people right here in Nevada. Do you?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure every child gets health care. That's why I helped to create the Children's Health Insurance Program. And I want to support states that are expanding health care and including undocumented children and others. I want to open up the opportunity for immigrants to be able to buy in to the exchanges under the Affordable Care Act. I think to go beyond that, as I understand what Governor O'Malley has recommended, so that they would get the same subsidies, I think that is it raises so many issues. It would be very difficult to administer. It needs to be part of comprehensive immigration reform when we finally do get to it.
So through all that gobbledygook, yes, illegals should get Obamacare, and yes, they should get subsidies. Even Jim Webb got pressured into saying he had no problem with that. So Jim was just one big candy store, and it's a question of who can give away the most.
Somebody was saying that they really liked the assessment of the debate I had, and it's easy to write good stuff when you really feel a sense of shock, a sense of disbelief. E.J. Dionne said, isn't it amazing that we're watching a debate about socialism and capitalism in the United States in 2015? Yeah, amazing is a word. Disturbing, terrifying. I mean, you know, you pick your term there. There really wasn't anybody on that stage who wanted to say, no, we are a capitalist economy. We are built upon the free market. We are built on the idea that you could rise as high as you want. You can make as much money as you want. You can do anything you want in this country. That if you work hard, you play by the rules, the sky is the limit. Nobody wanted to say that. And they asked Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders was an out-and-out democratic socialist, and everybody else was like, yeah, well, I'm kind of like that. There was nobody who was wanting to say, no, socialism is a bad idea, that everywhere it has tried, it has mass-produced misery. And every time I say this, you get some idiot on Twitter who says, Jim, the National Socialists weren't really socialists. North Korea calls itself a socialist country, but it's not really socialist. You know, every country that's ever called itself socialist, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, none of those things are real socialism. That there's some sort of like special organic Vermont socialism out there that's just waiting to be used. It's just like it tastes like Ben and Jerry's. It's fantastic, and it's you know, all, it's gonna be great. And once we implement that, it's gonna be fine. It's gonna be totally different from all the other experiments in socialism in human history. You could have chalked this up to a failure of the education system, that Americans don't understand or remember or realize why socialism is bad. There was also quite a bit of disingenuous on the part of the candidates last night. Greg, did you know that socialism is really just about standing up to the richest 0.1%?
Totally.
And it's also about promoting entrepreneurialism.
Right.
And small business.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
There is disingenuousness in that, but also just this overall sense that everything should, college education should be free. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
You know, but that'll make it, you know, that'll make things better. People forget, we just raised taxes on the rich as part of the most recent budget deal. And you know, it's like it doesn't count to Democrats. No, we got to do another one. Got to get it back here as quickly as possible. The only mention of Planned Parenthood came from Hillary in that question of how you're going to pay for it. And the idea is, you know, how dare Republicans attack Planned Parenthood? Never mind the fact that they announced that they decided they don't want to take compensation for fetal body parts anymore, you know. But even though there's nothing wrong with it, you know.
Right.
It was clearly geared towards the base of the Democratic Party. The base of the Democratic Party is, as I mentioned earlier, functionally isolationist, functionally pacifist, and I think we can now say functionally socialist. They are out and proud. In a way, this is very good for us. This basically, you know, let's let 2016 be a referendum on socialism. I thought we'd do really well if the referendum was on gun ownership and the Second Amendment, but let's do it. Let's make this deal. Let's put it up there. Let's see how it goes, because I still feel pretty good about those odds. And I kind of like the idea of our opposition being open socialists as opposed to closet socialists.
Jim, I think you lurched to it there right at the end as I was watching this. And obviously, as we watch the Republican debates and the primaries play out, we have certain candidates we probably think more highly of than others, and we would be concerned if some of them became president. But after watching last night, you almost look back at the Republican field from top to bottom and go,
Anybody I've given – hey, Carson, go right ahead. Donald Trump, I salute you, sir. You know, your version of crony capitalism looks better than socialism. Okay, I'll take that. So, you know, Huckabee, Rand Paul, anybody I've ever sent critical stuff of, come on in. You're looking really sweet this morning.
On that note, Jim, we get the next Republican debate, I think, 2 weeks from today. So rest up. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.